Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the digital workplace. From the role of AI in the workplace to the future of remote work, we cover it all. Tune in as we chat with industry leaders and experts. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started in the digital landscape, we've got you covered. Subscribe to Shift Happens wherever you listen to podcasts and stay ahead of the curve.
Shift Happens podcast.
Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and technologies transforming the future of work. Today, we have a fascinating discussion about the impacts of AI on information management and data quality. Our guest is Tori Miller-Liu, who brings years of experience working with the Association for Intelligent Information Management. We dive into how AI is shining a light on long-standing challenges around data governance, security, and interoperability. Tori shares insights on developing an AI strategy, sustainable innovation practices, and the importance of cross-functional collaboration between roles like the CIO, CISO, and data officers. Get ready for a wide-ranging conversation that touches on the human impacts of AI, the need for agile workplace cultures, and how emerging technologies like Gen AI are driving a shift in how we think about the digital employee experience. Thank you for joining our podcast. In the Shift Happens podcast, we talked about the shift in the digital workplace. And the exciting part is there's always shifts in changing. And we always start our segment. This is actually something new, which we kind of thought about because music is near and dear to all of us, no matter what kind of music you like, what kind of season you are in your career or your life. There's always some theme in music that resonate. So we call this segment the soundtrack of shifts. And as we're going to talk about AI and information management, what song reminds you of the shift that's happening today?
Well, I was hoping this wasn't so cliche, but as soon as you asked me that question ahead of time, I thought of Bob Dylan's The Times Are A-Changing, which is a classic of the civil rights era. And it has a lot of meaning around civil rights and equity and equality. But when you look at the lyrics, I like that it calls attention to the inevitability of change. And I feel like at this moment in time, from a societal and technology perspective, that's what we're experiencing. There's, I think, quite a lot of inevitability around AI at the pace that it's accelerating, at the pace of adoption, and hopefully for the better, and hopefully it'll improve lives. But I sort of feel like if you don't move with that change and you don't educate yourself, you are going to be left behind to a degree. And I think the song kind of talks about being left behind to history.
This song, I've heard it in multiple iterations too, because it's such a great song. Nina Simone did a rendition of it. I think a lot of the other folk singers did it. And it was a protest song, right, during the civil rights. But there's a section in there. He talks about the line is drawn, the curse is cast. The slow one now will later be fast. As the present now will later be past, the order is rapidly fading, right? And to your point, I don't want to sound, the new order is coming, and this is AI, right? Times are changing. So I love that. It's very, very appropriate.
And I do think it's interesting that you picked out that line too, because I do think, especially on social media and LinkedIn today, there are a lot of people that are picking sides around the AI argument. You know, the folks who are AI ethicists and are, to a degree, very against development, those who are AI bros and very into development. And I really think from a realistic perspective, if you're sitting at an enterprise and you're making decisions about the technology for that enterprise, you probably need to be somewhere in the middle. I think you need to listen to all voices. I don't think you should take a side. I think you should be aware of technology. AI is a tool, like many other tools that our enterprises have encountered. And we need to make intelligent decisions about how to use those tools and get all the research and information that we can to prepare our organizations for success and risk mitigation and sustainability.
That's really a good point, right? Let's unpack that further, because you're right. There's so much news coming out, like recently or only a couple of days ago, Microsoft announced they hired the head of DeepMind to be the CEO of Microsoft AI, right? So all these big news and great news, all these tech companies investing. But at the same time, at an organization level, at least with customers we talked to as well, I'm sure with your members, we're finding that organizations need direction. They need help, right? So from your point of view, what are some of the biggest challenges specific to data, information management, and how are organizations now thinking about that with respect to AI and how they can maximize it in their enterprises?
So at AIM, Association for Intelligent Information Management, we've always been really focused on unstructured data. And that's the data that sits outside of those tidy little databases. It's the invoices, it's the engineering schematics, it's contracts, it's emails, it's text messages. And it's good that we've been focused on that, because unstructured data is very often the fuel for generative AI or intuitive AI, whatever words you want to use to describe it. But if you're looking at ChatGPT, it's feeding off of unstructured data. And I actually think that right now, that's probably one of the biggest areas for improvement for a lot of organizations. We've had the luxury of ignoring unstructured data for quite some time. It's almost been a luxury. It's like, okay, if your organization can afford it, why don't you leverage your unstructured data? Because it's valuable, it's massive, and you can use it to improve customer experience or automate processes and realize operational efficiency. When you're talking about generative AI, I don't think you can really afford to ignore that data anymore. You do need to have high quality data to make AI work and make it sustainable.
It's very interesting what you're both starting to talk about. We talked about, so if we now put that data in the context of the digital workplace environment, you have all these digital systems coming in, primarily because the SaaS industry has done so well in helping organizations realize that you can subscribe to these services. You don't have to think about the ownership of these applications in-house. Fantastic. You have the opportunity to leverage hyperscale computing. Fantastic, right? Because they're all cloud related. And then it does come back into, well, the systems are meant to work with unstructured data. And so the organization turns them on, powers all the users, and then the users are trying to have near-time collaboration, which does remove barriers. But the barrier, the biggest barrier that was being discussed at this conference was the quality of information. And so I guess maybe why don't we try to answer this question, which many were asking, where do you start, right? Like, what do you actually do to structure your information management strategy? So in your view, Tori, how do you think about what is that starting point? What does that blueprint look like?
Well, a couple points there. One, I like that you talk about data quality, because we have a thought leader in the space named Chris Cerdak. And at one of our events in October, he shared a quote from this general from World War II, Omar Bradley, who said, amateurs talk strategy and professionals talk logistics. And the way Chris translated that, and I've thought about this quote since then, is we really need to be thinking about the logistics of AI, and that's data quality, and that's interoperability, and that's security and permissions around this unstructured data. So when you're thinking about those elements and the logistics, that's the stuff that's going to make AI as a tool sustainable and effective in your organization. That's how you operationalize it, right? So you mentioned the SaaS systems, and I do think it's worth pointing out that, yes, we've had a proliferation of systems in the last decade at enterprise levels. And a lot of that's because of these great SaaS systems that are really best of breed and addressing specific use cases very, very well. We don't need the monolithic systems anymore, because we have like great digital asset management systems or contract management systems. Fabulous. They're not always interoperable. And so I do think that's going to be a barrier to AI success. That's an example of mapping the logistics of AI. So going back to the idea of this information strategy, traditionally, if you look at AIM literature, the strategy has really always been about convincing the executives to buy into information management. It's sort of explaining this is the reason why information management's important. And ultimately, it's you want to leverage your probably second to your people, your most valuable asset, your information and data. And this is why you should do it. And it's a tactic for capturing that why. I do think now we need IAM strategies to step up a bit and also map the logistics of AI and other automation tools. I mean, AI is not the only cool emerging technology. We need to figure out the logistics of blockchain. We need to think of quantum computing. Like the exercise around thinking about the logistics of your data is going to benefit other initiatives, other technologies.
How do you see the work of the CISO's office or the security teams and companies think about the acceptable usage policy of AI?
Yeah, and also it's the usage, but it's also where's the source of the data coming from? And I know that's been a barrier right now for some organizations to adopt Copilot and other generative AI tools because we're struggling right now to figure out the controls. You don't want someone to be using a ChatGPT engine and all of a sudden they're seeing the bonus for your entire marketing department and they're sitting over in IT. Like that's an access and permission and control issue. So it's going back again to the logistics. I do think there's a conversation that needs to be had, and I would probably start with having your CIO, your CISO, if you have a chief data officer, those are the folks that really need to be at the table, your information manager, and they need to be thinking about how are we going to navigate the flow of data, the interoperability, how are we going to manage the quality of data, what are our metrics for and standards around what quality we're willing to accept, and then how are we managing the security and permissions. And if the technology cannot yet meet our requirements and our standards, what do we do? Do we wait? Do we do a really contained experiment that doesn't touch our most sensitive data so that we can just get used to this technology? I mean, there's so many ways you can slice that cake. But I think the important thing is certainly not rushing and saying, okay, our AI usage policy is everyone should learn prompt engineering and use AI as much as possible. That's great on a personal, very contained level, but oh my goodness, for the love that all that is good in this world, do not let your staff use any of your data in AI. I mean, we've seen so many good cases in the media about, Samsung, oh, that poor guy. Like, oh my gosh. An AI usage policy probably wouldn't have prevented that. I mean, how much do people pay attention to?
You know what the
policies?
Other challenge is too is the classification schema. As we work with organizations, we walk into these projects and they're not updated. Traditionally they were quite static, right? You put a classification schema of maybe, four values because the organization didn't have the controls or the automation in place to consider that we could be much more appropriate in categorizing the information. And so now you're dealing with a static, antiquated classification schema. Doesn't really fit. And you speak about interoperability. It doesn't really fit the way these new systems are working. And so there's a paralysis, right? So I think it's critical to also consider that when you do classify or categorize the information, you give yourself a chance at least doing the access right. And when you have that chance to do the access right, you start to see the promise of what these Gen AI capabilities or everyday AI tooling can do for the end user's experience. And so I guess in some of the work and the studies that you all have done and even the paper we co-wrote, it's important that not only the quality or the classification is done, but that also, we consider where is this going to be used and how is it going to be used and how much of it is also going to be generated by prompt sort of experience. Because that's another point, right? Data continues to grow because now Gen AI will contribute and create even more content. So you're right. I think all these things come into the play, but interoperability becomes, core to that issue.
Amari, it's almost like you're saying AI shined a spotlight on existing problems.
That's exactly right. Because Because your point around data quality and logistics is nothing new. I mean, if we rewind 10 years ago when the cloud was a thing, everybody moved to the cloud. And this was the talk track, right? Oh yeah, we're moving to the cloud. We'll do a better job. We're gonna clean up, we're gonna organize, and we're gonna classify and tag. Oh wait, we don't have enough time. Let's move everything, and then once we get there, we'll clean it up.
Yeah, then you'll
But then what happens? Yeah. 10 years later, you move to a new house, your boxes are still there, right? But now with AI, because sure, there's power in helping with better productivity. I'm sure you've seen Copilot. It creates Word documents, PowerPoint files, great. But the second aspect of it is now it finds information faster. And this is the trouble. I was working with a customer. They're piloting Copilot for Microsoft 365. And they asked Copilot, what is Mario's password? Obviously, it said, I can't tell you that. But then they change it up. They change the prompt. List all the files I have access to with the word password. And voila, all content that this person didn't even know he had access to showed up, right? Now, nobody's being malicious, because why that happened is, you know, I shared a Word document with Tori. I don't know if Tori shared it with somebody else. I added Mario to my Teams, right? On one hand, it makes collaboration easier, as Mario mentioned earlier. But at the same time, we have all these risks. So sure, we can prepare it, we can lock it down, we can clean it up before we use AI, but as Mario described, but what about the ongoing use, right? So I think what's also critical for organizations to consider, if you want to enforce a lot of this discipline, you can't do it manually. People are not malicious. They're not going to be like, oh, I'm going to open this Word document with everybody's compensation on it. It's not going to happen. But in an accidental way, it may be out there. So we need to put guardrails in place to automate a lot of these enforcement to ensure data quality and data security.
Hello, Shift Happens podcast listeners. I have an exciting offer for you. Join us for our in-person Shift Happens conference, October 10 to 11 in Washington, D.C., Registration is free. That's right, it's free. And you walk away with actionable strategies from industry leaders and peers to make shift happen in your digital workplace. Visit shifthappens.to to register today. We'll see you there.
I think that's true. And I also hope that when people are listening to this, especially if you're at a small or mid-sized business, I worry that this sounds so overwhelming that we're saying, even though you've been hearing to experiment with AI and here's these great tools, you need to stop and look at your information management strategy, the quality of your data, the interoperability, the security. It can feel really overwhelming, but I think if folks spent even 30 minutes just looking online, looking at aim.org, there are a lot of solution providers out there that make this manageable. There's consultants and solution providers that can help break down exactly how to update your information strategy, exactly how to migrate data, exactly how to enforce security and permissions and controls. AvePoint's one of them. And there's so many others too. So I don't think in this day and age, there's a whole ecosystem around AI that can help your enterprise make these things work. And I say that because I've spent my entire career at nonprofits, at small and mid-sized nonprofits. And at a very basic level, this all sounds super overwhelming to me, too, even though I know the industry and I know what's available. So I think it's worth mentioning that take a breath, do some research. There's multitudes of paths that are economical, that are simple and within reach for organizations of any size to do this well.
I want to echo that, too. AIM has done a fantastic job with all the resources. And for all the listeners, I encourage you even to look up AIM's stance on AI accountability, because that whole framework can be applied within your organization. If you're thinking about coming up with a usage policy, you can use that as a basis, right? I love the part where it talks about, you know, a flexible framework is needed, 100%, because it's not a one-size-fits-all, right? Even within your organization, AI is still not a one-size-fits-all. It's a one-size-fits-one. What marketing needs to do with it is totally different than legal or accounting. Tons of great resources. You know, you just have to right size it for your organization.
And not to get political, but if folks want to get involved in the regulations around AI, now would be a great time to write your representatives about the AI regulations coming out of Congress and the administration in the U.S. and also in Canada, and talk about the importance of a universal framework. And that was AIM's very strong stance, that we don't want a repeat of GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, where it was very confusing and challenging for enterprises to comply with that regulation. And then every other country came up with their own flavor. States came up with their own flavor of that in the U.S. So I really think it's important that now that the EU Parliament has come out with the AI Act, that they were first to the table. Let's look at that as inspiration. Let's try to build a universal framework. It's a good act. It's built on good principles. It's really about risk mitigation, as opposed to, I think, control and penalty, which I think is nice. So I hope we get a universal framework, because I lived through GDPR and I don't want to repeat that. You're totally right. I
think in a universal framework will certainly make it easier for engineering. You know, how do you think about building interoperability? What do you think the standards should be, the protocols? It also will help a lot of organizations that are building products that now are going to be anchored on AI capability to consider this at the time of designing the software. Just make things, you know, a lot more, you know, fluid in the way the systems are going to work together. The truth is, I agree with you. GDPR was very confusing. You had all those articles. You come back, and a lot of vendors in the, you know, sort of software vendors were looking to refactor their technology to fit the articles after the fact. And so it left, frankly, a lot of the end user or your customer, let's say, experience. Still troubled with, well, wait a second, am I putting the right controls in place? Am I actually GDPR compliant? And if we stay stuck there, then it's going to prevent progress. And then ultimately, you don't have this environment, you know, that's really supposed to be improving the employee experience and, you know, true engagement, changing the way people are communicating.
And I also think to that point, it would behoove software developers, AI developers right now, and I'm sure most of them are already doing this, to really pay attention to the regulations and I think be proactive around it. I mean, you look at some of the call for comments around copyright from the Library of Congress a few months ago. It talks about some potential requirements for AI developers to retain the data that they used to train their model. That's a lot. That's a lot of storage. That's an increase in your data center storage fees. It's something that's, I think, important to pay attention to now, because it's going to have infrastructure repercussions for organizations if it comes to fruition. And maybe it's something you should be doing anyway. I think it's important that AI output is identifiable, that you know where the source is, you know where it came from, especially if you're at an enterprise and you're worried about liability. I want to know where this information came from, especially if it's outside my actual data model, my data.
Yeah.
I want to know.
You, and then Tori, another question for you. How do you think about what AGI will ultimately do once it, I mean, it will eventually come into play. You know, folks are now struggling with what Gen AI is going to do, but as we think down the road and we think about what AGI may do, what do you think are the most important things or the most important steps to take now so that when we do have, you know, true artificial general intelligence, we are able to think about how to bring that into the fold of the human experience?
Oh,
hey, we're starting with a great song, right? You got to get back there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, at a very, well, okay. I'm a former CIO, so I tend to think of things in the terms of technology. I think it is wise to think about the logistics, the infrastructure now in preparation for later iterations of AI. And that starts with, Mari, what you were talking about. Like, it starts with the basics. Your data should be categorized. You should have some human knowledge and human intervention related to data accessibility, data categorization, classification. That's the kind of stuff you do now in preparation for those later things. Now, if we're talking about what is the impact on the workforce, one of the phrases that I have heard is the digitization of labor, just like the digitization of documents or the digital transformation. So I think it's worth noting that there are applications of AI that not only introduce operational efficiencies, but can impact your workforce and what that looks like. And so I think it's an opportunity for HR departments and executives to start figuring out, how do I reskill my staff? If it's not possible to reskill them, how do I find other opportunities for them outside of the company or within the company? I think those are healthy conversations to have now. It's a little outside of AIM's wheelhouse. We're not about HR. We're about information management and AI. But I do think that's a reality of it. There's repercussions to every change, right?
Hence the shift that we're talking about in the bigger picture. I think you're right. The skills aspect of it, going back to some of the conversation that I was hearing this week at the Gartner conference, a lot of attention was paid on the culture you want. And that if we want a culture that's really a mixture of AGI, a way for people to feel empowered in the workplace, a way for many to understand how to incorporate the opportunity this new technology is going to give many organizations and individuals alike to learn differently. It's a culture that needs to start now. And many of the folks that I met and had the opportunity to just chat about this culture concept with, we're really looking for new ways of changing the way we work. And maybe it starts with some of what you're saying, right? Going back and saying, what is the skill and where do I want you to be? And information does play a role in that. We often hear now a lot of desire in building enablement for the employee that also helps them understand their career path. So again, what's the information we're going to be sharing with them? Can some of that be done with Gen AI? Can we do some of that with even AGI, where we can help and understand the individual and then put a learning path in place for them? So I think all of these are great opportunities, but there's certainly right now a lack of focus in where's the right place to start building this culture.
Do we know enough yet about what some of this technology is going to look like and the changes that could come down the line to really intentionally design that culture the way we want? I mean, maybe it's better to focus your culture on agility and innovation and not being afraid to fail or experiment or try things. Yeah, maybe it's more the characteristics or the cultural norms that you should be seeking right now. I don't know how I would prepare my own staff to think about, hey, at some point, like, there might be AGI that will do 50% of your job.
In my opinion, I think, at least right now, today, right, the first order of business is, from a culture perspective, is dispel this thinking, oh, AI will take all of the jobs. Because in some, news headlines, that's what it's saying. Oh, AI will rule the world, take your jobs, right? Well, we all know that's not true. Like you said early on, it's a tool. It's no different than getting the new phone or, cloud software. It's better, but we need to embrace it, right? We need to learn how to take advantage of it so we can focus on more of the heavy lifting, and then we can let today Gen AI take care of all the basic manual things that we don't really care for.
Rethink your collaboration tools as well. I think that's the other dimension of the human experience. What are we using to communicate? Imagine a world where you're in a room, you're not just meeting with your colleagues in person, but you also have an AGI component to the team. How will you interact with them? What does that experience look like? When you see the work that Facebook has been doing around with Kodak, right, where you can have this real image and this real impression of a human, yet it's not really a human. So I do think that it comes back to, how do we engage differently and engage in a way where we don't fear the technology ducks, to your point, right? So maybe it's not AI is coming to take your job. It's just, it's coming to your job, right? So what does that mean ultimately for you in your own individual experience and growth?
I love that you brought that up. So in my previous role as a chief information officer, I was on a team at my former employer called the Future of Work team, and it was with HR, our COO, CIO, and it was pre-pandemic, so we were really thinking about the building itself, like how do we make more interactive spaces, more collaborative spaces. Once the pandemic hit, it was so interesting how the team's focus shifted to away from physical workspace to the digital workspace. And I still think about that concept around, you know, when we're interacting with Microsoft Teams or Slack or whatever project management tool you're using, Asana or what have you, how are those experiences and those moments of collaboration shaping the individual employee's experience of work at that moment? What is your digital workspace like? And are we paying enough attention to it? I mean, we paid so much attention to our buildings. Are they LEED certified? Do we have an area where staff can eat? Do we have a gym and showers? And I feel like we don't pay quite as much attention to that digital workspace.
Exactly. And even on the digital workplace, right? We don't even think about, does it help with the flow? All we do today is, oh, there's a new tool. Here's another tool. Here's another tool. And now we have all these tools. Now we have Loop. We have Teams. We have, you know, Slack. And what ends up happening is people get overwhelmed. And that's why, in some cases, people just go back to good old email and Excel files, right? No matter how much investments organizations are making. And that's one of the picture I see. We spend all this money and we get Gen AI and people still go back, send a WhatsApp message to Tori. Hey, Tori, where's that TPS report?
Well, I guess you could draw out from that a really good example around why AI is shining a light on issues that already existed. Because we'll use the collaboration tools as an example. If you have Teams, Slack, if you have Teams and you have multiple teams and you're unaware of how many teams you have, what conversations have been occurring in those teams, and now all of a sudden you put AI on top of all of that, you're going to have redundant conversations, you're going to have versioning control problems, you're going to not have the ability to say, okay, if you're looking for a single source of truth on project A, you should be going to these two team channels. So those are the kind of questions that I think we have to ponder as we're looking at AI and whether or not this can work. How many tools do we have that are talking about this project A? Where is the single source of truth? Why did we have so many tools in the first place? And what are the sources of data for this AI engine to actually work?
You know, you just shone a light on a very, very important, but organizations don't talk about. So today everybody's excited. Oh, AI, Copilot. We got to think about deployment and adoption. But organizations forget you have all these existing investments of tools. What did you do back then? Right? Like, did you really think about when cloud came out, when Teams came up, like properly, like you said, the physical building, like, are we being thoughtful on how we design our digital workplace? And yet we're throwing another thing onto it.
Right.
Another tool, another data source.
So let's look at it this way now. The opportunity, though, is to advance the architecture, because today you are able to actually think about the digital experience. We have enough of a sample set based on what you're both saying. We have a sample set now, right? We had this, you know, incredible world event where it shifted us in the way we think about communicating, right? And so we have that. Then we have now, finally, I could be anywhere and really work, right? So that's great. The next thing is we trained ourselves to have this, basically be comfortable with video conferencing. Right? There was a time before the pandemic where no one would turn on their cameras, right? It was like a shyness factor. We're all past that, right? We're doing podcasts, we're doing, you know, meetings. And so we're getting ready, I think, as a society to take the next step. And this next step is about how does the information that we have access to make us better, inform us better? I don't want to have to go look for information because it's chaotic right now. I have to go drag and drop and click and browse, and I'm tired of that. I've been doing that ever since the internet came about, right? Browsers, you know, taught us how to drag and drop and look for things. Now, I kind of do just want to have one conversation and be informed and be well understood, because I expect the systems to give me the information. I expect the systems to know who I was talking to a couple of hours ago. I expect the systems to know where my last edits were. So if we can bring all of this together, maybe we just get rid of all this mundane focus, because we could actually focus on each other. And if we focus on each other, we maybe will be able to actually be more productive in changing things, in supporting our customers better, right? In responding quicker to the things that need attention. Maybe our employee is undervalued. Maybe we should pay attention to that person. So it is about the human experience. And I, by the way, I've gotten here because of all the talk that I heard this week, and that everything was coming back to, if you think about the trends today to work on tomorrow's strategy, it is about improving the human experience. And I think if we all align on that, then it becomes less about, it's the architecture. Oh, it's that the data is not ready. Okay, fine. Let's solve those things, right? So maybe that's the opportunity for us, right?
I like that. Keep your eye on the prize. It's about improving customer experience, human experience. And this goes back to the point I was trying to make earlier about the information strategy has always been about the why. And certainly it should talk about logistics, but it's still about the why. You shouldn't be investing in anything if you don't know the reason for it and you don't have buy-in on that reason. And I think improving human experience is such a lovely reason to invest in technology. It's motivating.
Boy, we can keep going, and we want to make sure we're respectful of Tori's time. So Tori, such a great conversation. But before you wrap up, with respect to information management, what are some of the two or three takeaways you would offer our listeners on getting ready to take advantage of AI and make sure their information or data is in the right place?
Okay, I'm going to start with number one. In recognition of Mario's last comment, focus on the why. So we've already talked about how AI is a tool, just like any other technology that we've been exposed to in the last 30, 40 years. It's a tool, and success is dependent on people and their understanding of the importance of the initiative and why you're doing it and their buy-in. It's all about change leadership and change management, right? So that's number one. Number two, we talked about focus on logistics at length, but I think it's, you need to be having conversations and cross-departmental conversations about accessibility, interoperability, security, and data quality. Those are like the building blocks for AI success. And then I think third, we didn't talk about this too much, but I think there's a conversation that needs to be had around the sustainability of innovation. So how do you actually operationalize this? How do you scale it so it's safe for your organization, for your employees, for your consumers? That to me is sustainable. And I think we need new metrics of success around innovation and experimentation that includes scalability and safety and improving the lives of humans, coming back to that human experience idea.
As Duck said, we could probably go on. You've been so much fun, and these topics are amazing. So we look forward to meeting you again, hopefully not just in a two-dimensional world, but hopefully in person. And I love, I definitely love your approach to logistics. I'm going to have to steal that, if you don't mind.
Now we lost all from Chris. So.
All right.
Go for it.
Well, thank you, Tori. And we appreciate you having on this podcast.
Thank you. Have a good time.
Thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Thanks for listening. What a fascinating discussion exploring the profound impacts AI will have on data management and the digital workplace. Tori provided so many insightful perspectives, from focusing on the why behind AI initiatives to the critical logistics around data quality, security, and interoperability that organizations need to address. It's clear that roles like the CISO, CIO, and data officers will need to collaborate closely to navigate the AI-driven shifts heading our way. Be sure to check out our show notes for our latest report on AI and information management. You can also learn more about the great work being done by the Association for Intelligent Information Management at their website, AIIM.org.
If you liked today's episode, subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll see you next time.
Shift Happens Podcast. Shift Happens Podcast.
Shift Happens Podcast is a production of AvePoint, Inc., produced and edited by the AvePoint brand team. Stay up to date on the latest trends in digital workplace transformation by visiting avpoint.com.